You're listening to a sermon by J. Evan Kreider, recorded on Sunday, September 3rd, 2023, at Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
It's a privilege to be here on our 37th anniversary year. I don't know if other churches pay anywhere near the attention to anniversaries that we do, but you would think it was an All Saints Day or something the way we treat it. We always remember it, giving thanks that we are still meeting as a fellowship against all odds. I remember when we began, we were not this large a group, basically. One similarity was that I was the preacher, and another similarity was that we had two tenors. And so I'm so glad to see that we have two tenors again today. And from the very beginning, we had a response time, which I think has been crucial to our identity as a fellowship and to our thinking. Throughout the Bible, almost from the beginning to the end, we read one story after another telling of conflict. There are stories of conflicts between brothers, which led either to one brother fearing the other or being estranged or murder. There are conflicts between wealthy people who supported the Judean dynasties and the rich temple hierarchy, and the poor rural people from the fields and the villages whose interests were often represented by the prophets. There are only a few psalms which do not focus somehow on conflict. And this bothered me so much during meditations that I finally went to Sven and said, "What's going on?" There was conflict between temple leaders and those who were prone to be influenced by Jesus. There was conflict between some of the guys who were most closely associated with Jesus. There was conflict between wives, which is not surprising, between prophets, which is, but we call them true and false now in retrospect. There was conflict between Paul and Barnabas, between Paul and James. Some of Paul's letters were prompted by the need to settle conflicts in house churches. There has obviously been conflict within Christianity and, sadly, among Anabaptists, judging from the number of splits over issues great and very small indeed. I think the Bible teaches us that we should not be surprised to find conflict facing us. And we do encounter conflict. The saying goes that two things are certain, death and taxes, and I would add conflict. Today's lectionary reading from Jeremiah 15 suggests that he was experiencing conflict. The reading refers to the prophet's persecutors, the wicked, the ruthless. Jeremiah begs that his pain cease from this conflict and that God offer him deliverance from conflict. The very opening words of today's lectionary psalm, number 26, were, "Vindicate me, O Lord." That's a red flag, indicating the presence of conflict. The psalmist then reveals that he is in conflict with the evildoers, the wicked, those who were worthless, the hypocrites. Maybe that's why he was in conflict. Our poet strives to avoid the company of such people and to avoid conflict. Today's gospel reading from Matthew 16 shows a certain level of conflict of ideas and ideals. As Peter quietly tried to talk Jesus out of even thinking about being martyred. But Jesus gives an unsettling answer. He basically says, "Yes, there will always be conflict. You will not be able to avoid it. And there will be times when conflict is costly, especially if you follow my way. Then you too may have to take up your cross, the cross of conflict, and follow me. But today I think we get the best counsel about conflict from the 12th chapter of Romans. Of course, Paul had only the very highest ideals in mind when he wrote these words, and we know that Paul himself was not able to live by his own words consistently. Who is? But just because these are high ideals, possibly even unachievable ideals, this does not mean that we should settle for lesser ideals. In verse 9, he writes, "Let love be genuine. Hold fast to that which is good." Verse 10, "Love one another mutually. Outdo each other in honoring each other." Verse 14, "Well known and seldom practiced." I've certainly forgotten to do it at times. "Bless those who persecute you." Now, I get out of it because I don't feel persecuted. "Bless those who don't agree with you. Bless those who are in conflict with the way you want to do things. Bless and don't badmouth them." Verse 16, "Live in harmony with one another." I find that our little fellowship survives because we put this into practice. Our spiritual tradition is one of conflict and splits all over the place. We have learned, even in our response time, to respect each other. And if we have conflict of conclusions and ideas, we've learned to respect them and still worship together. Verse 17 is certainly about conflict. "Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all." In other words, act in a way, well, think of the people you respect and you look up to. Act in a way so that when they find out what you did, you know they will respect what you did. Now, verse 18 has been embraced by many a monarch and other people because it has an escape clause. And Christians like escape clauses. "If it is possible, so far as it depends on you, live peacefully with all." I think that Paul is acknowledging that some individuals are actually a bit impossible. They will always insist on their way being followed. I can't imagine that I would be such a person. They are not peacemakers so much as they are self-appointed enforcers who want to ensure that everything is done the right way, their way. This can be true in politics, in church, in the workplace, in sports, in family, anywhere two or more people are gathered. I will paraphrase verse 19. "Never get even. Let God look after that detail." This series of ideals concludes appropriately with the words, "Overcome evil with good." Now, time and again, I have seen my friends put one or more of these high ideals into practice. We all saw Henry Klippenstein do it repeatedly, especially when Point Grey Fellowship was in conflict with some of the leadership of the Mennonite Brethren Conference, leaders with whom it was seemed impossible to avoid conflict, leaders who thought of themselves as judge and jury. I have heard Helmut speak forgivingly about being forced to serve in the German army I have heard a friend speak lovingly, if exasperatedly, about working to help a difficult sibling, all the while treating the sibling fairly. Another way of looking at these ideals is this. People observe how we respond in times of conflict. Our responses during conflict are more likely reflexive than carefully considered, which is why our responses carry even more weight. But our children see how we have dealt with conflict. Our friends see, and those with whom we are in conflict see. Not all conflicts end peacefully with handshakes and hugs. Some conflicts seem to cease only with separation, or sometimes when one of the parties dies. I think Paul is sort of acknowledging this in his escape clause. As far as it depends on you, live peacefully with all. Sometimes that seems to be all we can do, or is it? Too often I have forgotten to pray for the people who are in conflict with me. Or we can possibly find some other way to work around. No two conflicts are the same, and so the Bible does not offer us easy solutions which tell us how to fix conflict. How we work and operate in situations of conflict seems to be left up to us. And it is possible, on occasion, to be quite creative when facing conflict. This leads to a story. A true story reported, I think it was in The Guardian, coming from the German city of Wunsiedel in the Upper Bavaria. Rudolf Hess is buried there. In the 1980s, some neo-Nazis began holding marches in this city until the neo-Nazi marches were banned in 1990. And as the marches eventually grew to about 1,000 marchers, some rather clever citizens came up with an idea. They gathered pledges of financial support to an organization working against Nazism and hatred. The people then pledged money to this anti-Nazi cause for every meter the pro-Nazis marched. And people pledged to give a certain amount of money to the cause. And so while the neo-Nazis marched along, they saw writing on the street thanking them for raising so much money to fight peace. The peace people even set up tables along the way with water and bananas, and they encouraged them to keep marching so that they could raise more money for this anti-Nazi cause. And every now and then there would be a big sign declaring how much money they had raised since they had walked this far. If your enemies are thirsty, give them something to drink. It will make them furious. Insofar, it is up to you. Try to live peacefully with everybody. May God be with us while we try to find our creative ways to be people of God's peace. Amen.